Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Please help me in welcoming B.C. Brown to chat about her new book, A Touch of Madness. Welcome, Billy.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi, thank you for joining me.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
I'm really excited to talk about your book. Please tell us a bit about yourself and your background.
Well, I'm from Indiana. I grew up here, moved away for some time to Illinois and Missouri, and then came back home after a few years. I began writing at a very early age. My mother claims as soon as I could put a pen to paper. And I actually completed my first quote-unquote novel when I was 8 years old.
Huh.
It was a zombie romance called Bite Me.
I like the title.
Yeah, it was very humorous. And I call it a quote-unquote novel because it was only about 14,000 words. But for an 8-year-old, that's, you know, pretty impressive.
Yeah, for 8 years old, that's really good.
Yeah. And then I went on at about the age of 12. I decided I wanted to write some young adult horror. And so I wrote a story called, an actual novel called Swim or Die, which was about an alternate on the swim team who wanted to be the popular girl. So she started bumping off all the really popular girls. So I've been an avid writer my entire life. Of course, I'm very big on reading as well. And when I was in my early 20s, someone had some of my friends just finally goaded me eventually into writing my actual first novel. They basically told me to shut up and write. They weren't going to listen to me talk about it anymore. And I have to credit them a great deal with making me start doing what I love to do. I've had 3 books since then and been included in 1 anthology. The latest of the books that you mentioned is A Touch of Madness, which is actually the 2nd book in a series, the first book being A Touch of Darkness. And I published a high fantasy in 2007 called Sister Light, Book 1 of Shadows. And then the anthology I was included in, I was lucky enough to be included in a transgressive anthology, and it's called Fracas, a collection of short friction.
Hmm. When you're reading a book, is that what ignites your imagination, or is it the things that are around you, or a good movie, or just an incident?
Well, what it tends to be most of all for me is every book I write has come directly from a dream. At least the seed of the book or the core of the book has come directly from a dream that I've had. Movies,
I have that
and
too.
You do that too?
Oh, yeah. My best stories came from a dream.
Yeah, it's a fantastic thing to be able to dream in what I call technicolor.
Exactly.
With that, you know, to be able to dream so vividly and to be able to remember it is always, you know, it's not a trait that everybody has, I guess, which is unusual. It seems so odd for me. A lot of the books that I read and a lot of the movies that I watch and just people in my everyday life, they help kind of flesh out that initial seed that I'm given from my dreams. And they kind of help make it a better story. I include people I meet and their flaws and quirks and things like that. I can't write unless I have a movie going in the background, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in the same genre or anything. I have to have the background visual creativity to be able to create my own movie in my head.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always found that I'm a very visual person too. I think that's why when you're a very visual person, I think that dreams ignite your writing. Because it's sort of like go hand in hand with each other.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I almost need the visualization of both.
Mm-hmm.
Without the dreams, I wouldn't be able to write the books. But without the books, I don't think I would keep dreaming the way that I do.
Exactly. Well, books are huge. that's why I get kind of annoyed with people who don't read, because when you read, it's all ignited by your imagination. Everything, it's your world. You're escaping to whatever world you're reading about. You can be anywhere, do anything, have anything happen, and still just close the book and go on with your life. And it's that's the part that saddens me about people reading less.
Exactly. I can be a horrible villain in a book.
Mm-hmm.
I can literally root for the villain in the book, and I can be that person. But in, you know, when the book is finished, I get to close the book and I go back to being me.
Yeah.
I go back to being a good person with, I hope, relatively good ethics in life. But I can be anything that I want to be in a book. And I can sometimes, if I have enough time, I can be 6, 7, 20 different people all in the same day. If I have enough time to just tear through the books, it's, you know, it's wonderful to do that. And it really does, it stimulates your entire brain to read. They've proven that, you know, it stimulates so many different areas of your brain at once to read versus just sitting down and watching something visual being given to you, like watching a movie or just looking at artwork and things like that. There's different types of stimulation that occurs, and more areas of your brain are lit up when you are actually reading.
That's interesting, because it's really funny. One thing about me is that if I get interested in a subject, I have to read everything about the subject. I get kind of mini-obsessed about that one subject until I've sort of read every book about it. And I think that's because of the visual stimulation and then the extra oomph I get from the reading.
I can, but I'm a little different. I like to parcel it out over time. It's kind of like slowing down to eat your dessert.
Mm-hmm.
So that you just eat one bite, and then you get to just roll the bite around your tongue and around your mouth and really taste it before you swallow it. And then savor it, and then go on to the next bite. I do that with the things that engross me. And with books, things engross me. It's much more than music does or movies do, things of that nature. If I get one author who just absolutely captivates me, then I want to go out and immediately buy everything that that author has put out.
I will
selectively pick when I need my next fix from that author. And sometimes I'll pepper in some mediocre writing in between. But when I feel like I've had just enough fill of everything else, I will then grab another book from that author and devour that author again.
I have to switch up genres, because I go from, like, I'll be deep into Jane Austen, and then I have to switch to Dan Brown, and then maybe Harry Potter. I mean, I can't stick with one thing. I get bored. Are you like that, or do you, like, I have to just do this one writer and just zip through it?
No, I'm a little like you are. Some of it depends on if I'm writing in a particular genre at the time.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm writing in urban fantasy, I try to remember to stick with urban fantasy for the most part. But I'm a 3 and 4 book at a time reader.
That's me too.
Yeah. There's one book that's in my car, there's one book that's at work, there's another book that is maybe in the bathroom, and then there's maybe a book or two that are piled next to my bed.
Yeah,
not usually, but
that's
usually
actually is me. Exactly.
Yeah, usually in the living room by the recliner or the couch or something, but yeah, there's usually a couple of books at a time. If I have 3 books that I've started, then I try to keep 2 of them in urban fantasy. Because I'm writing something in urban fantasy, I need to keep my mindset relatively in that world.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can't just do all of them in the same genre.
It's
I can.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I can sit and I can read subtle shades of the same genre. Like I can read a full-blown police procedural mystery. And then the next thing I might read might be a paranormal mystery. And then the next thing I might read just might be a paranormal romance. They're
Do
all
you like...
they're linked, but they're just very subtle differences.
Do you like historical dramas or history? Does that like have an effect on your urban paranormal stories, or how do you feel about that?
I do. I enjoy anything that's historically set. I really enjoy them. I'm a big fan of the Wild West, so I will devour Wild West books and things of that nature and from that historical point. In other historical aspects, I kind of pick and choose my settings. I'm a Civil War fan, so I like a lot of Civil War. I'm a World War II fan, so I like a lot of books that are set in that time frame. And then I'm very, very selective on the rest of my time frames. The storyline itself has to contribute to the fact that it's a historically based novel for me. And the more historically accurate it can get, the buggier I go for it.
I think that's really interesting. I write fan fiction as well as novels and articles and stuff. And it was funny because I'm in the middle of two novels and a memoir, and I was watching the History Channel, and it just ignited a fan fiction story, and I'm like, oh, God, why now?
Of course.
I'm in the middle of three things. Why is that a fourth?
It always has to pop up right in the middle of something else, Sherry. Otherwise, it wouldn't be the muse. And that's just what she does.
Oh, I was like, okay, fine. I'll add that to my list.
Yeah, it's. I get a lot of inspiration from other stuff, like while I'm writing, which is why I do have to be very careful about making sure I keep just enough inspiration from what genre I'm writing in
mm-hmm.
on my plate at the same time. But I just don't want mashed potatoes piled on top of mashed potatoes piled on top of mashed potatoes. That's boring. Yeah, you eat that three meals a day, 7 days a week. It's, you know, you really just don't, you get a little tired of it. You've got to throw some corn in every so often and gravy just to have fun.
Have some peas or like maybe even a piece of pizza.
Exactly. Just something a little different to just kind of keep the creativity going. And on top of that, I've found that a lot of times I'll stagnate if I just stick with one genre and I'm writing that genre at the same time. The story gets so boring to me. Everything feels so old because I've just now read the 80 different ways to write paranormal mysteries. So I found that if I can toss in a little sci-fi,
mm-hmm.
you know, then all of a sudden I have all these ideas that are just exploding because I never would have considered before peppering in a little science fiction just to make it a little more interesting or creative.
It actually deepens it.
It does. It's like gradual layers. It's kind of like shading, really good shading in a piece of art.
Exactly.
Once you start shading in and adding the gradual layers, you just the story can come alive again, and it's fantastic. And you may think of a whole other tangent for the story or a whole other subplot that you never considered before.
That's true. And you actually can have to rewrite some parts of your book because it may totally change every aspect of it.
Every book I end up rewriting.
I've had to do that. My first book,
yeah.
Murder, Inc., I don't know why I added a poodle, and all of a sudden, no, it was not a poodle, it was a kitten, and all of a sudden I had to rewrite the whole book because of the silly kitten.
Of course. It's... When I first began writing Sister Light, my high fantasy novel, which is actually published under my pen name, B.B. Walter, I was two-thirds of the way through finishing that book, and I went, what if she's not an only child? And that just exploded the book, and I had to go back, and I had to rewrite almost the entire thing to include hints to this other sibling throughout the entire book.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was, I don't even know what made me think about doing that, except for all of a sudden I called a friend and said, you know, what if she's not an only child? And he went, that's good. So,
uh-oh.
I went, oh, man, he's like my beta reader. That means when your beta reader pops up and goes, oh, that's a good idea, then you have to go, oh, now I have to think about actually doing it.
And you're like, oh, God, no.
Yeah, and it was a lot of work. It ended up being a lot of work to go back and rewrite that much of it to add that many subtle hints into the book. But I did. I went back and did it, and people were extremely excited is what I was told afterwards. So
it's just, it's a weird thing the way, as you said, the muse works is because you're like, you're going in one direction and you're actually following the muse and everything, and all of a sudden, you're like, okay, all right, fine. If you want me to go that way too, I will. Fine, leave me alone.
Yeah. Stop talking to me already. I'll do it.
Yeah.
That's part of the fun of being a writer too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's part of the excitement.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a taste of your book. What do you want your readers to take away from reading it?
Psychics, serial killers, and sex.
Sounds good. I can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. What I want them to take away from it is no matter how bad you think your life can possibly get, just remember that Abby's life is 1,000 times worse. Just the things that she's subjected to and the things that she subjects herself to, all in the name of justice or all in the name of her personal justice. That's kind of, you know, nothing gets as bad as seeing, you know, kids that have been murdered.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing in your life that gets as bad as that. And Abby doesn't just get to see kids that have been murdered. She gets to experience their death firsthand.
That's the psychic part.
Yes. So, I mean, but other than that, on the fun side, it's psychic, serial killers, and sex.
That's a good way. You know, that should be your tagline and everything.
A lot of people at book signings, a lot of people will come up to me and they're like, you have 30 seconds. I'm like, I'm B.C. Brown, and I write psychics, serial killers, and sex. And if that doesn't get you, my best friend over here writes, because I do a lot of joint book signings with a fellow author. Her name's Molly Daniels. She's a fantastic women's fiction author. And she writes women's fiction and kind of young adult romance. And we're able to kind of bounce off of each other quite a bit. People are like, oh no, I can't do violence, and you're talking serial killers, and I'm like, then you'll probably enjoy Molly Daniels, you know. And
she's right next to me.
Yeah, and she's right here, as a matter of fact. And she'll bounce, you know, she'll bounce over to me too. And people are like, I just don't do the romance thing. She's like, and here's my good friend B.C. Brown. She writes about psychics and serial killers. So I use that a lot, actually. You know, and then other people are like, so what do you write? And I'm like, weird. And they're like, and? I was like, no, weird.
That's
is
it.
Good. Yeah, weird is good.
Weird.
That's it. So
you have to accept my weird. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, I tell people there's nothing like the weird I can give you.
Yeah, that's the best way to go. I mean, mm-hmm. You want people to understand that everybody's weird is different.
Yeah, we all have...
My weird is different than your weird.
Oh, yeah. It's like the Baskin-Robbins of life.
Oh, yeah.
So many different flavors.
I absolutely understand it. Oh, what was the biggest satisfaction of completing your latest book? Does it get harder?
My biggest satisfaction of completing my latest book, typing the end. That was my biggest
end?
Satisfaction. It was trying to get A Touch of Madness out, which is, like I said, the second book in the series, was murder. The first book, I mean, no pun intended, the first book was so easy and so seamless that it was a dream to write. The second book, on the other hand, Abby was a little more difficult. She was not particularly thrilled with the way I wanted her to go in the book, or as I guess I should say, as the way I needed her to go, because I had already set up a third book ready to, you know, to come out as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so she required a little more coercing than usual, which took more time. So I unfortunately kind of blew my deadlines, but they were personal deadlines, not anything set in stone. They were just personal deadlines. So truthfully, typing the end on A Touch of Madness was so incredibly satisfying. It was nearly orgasmic that I needed, that was the best part about it. But, on top of that, I actually have been able to do a lot more promotion with this novel than I was able to do with the first one, A Touch of Darkness. Mainly because my job just worked out better to where I had some weekends off. They happened to come off during the summer, which was right after the book launched. And it's summertime. That's when everything's in full swing as far as conventions go and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So I've been able to do a lot more promoting, and that's what I really love to do. I really, really, really love to talk to readers, even if they don't buy my book, even if they're not interested in reading my book. I'm very interested in hearing what readers really do enjoy.
Yeah,
absolutely. And just being able, to talk with them. And
it's hard to find fellow readers. Once you get them, you grab them.
Exactly. Well, and just seeing what's going on in their world and what floats their boat. Because I know what I enjoy, and I think I know what other people enjoy. But sometimes you're pleasantly surprised.
Oh, yeah.
So, absolutely. I mean, that's really been kind of immensely gratifying for me as well.
I understand what you're saying about arguing with your character, because I've done it too, but most of the public that are listening may not understand that the character is alive in our heads. Why don't you go a little bit more into that?
I like to equate it best to a marionette and his puppets.
That's good.
Most non-writers, they seem to think that we are these great puppet masters. We just make them dance and do whatever we want them to do. We know what the beginning of our book is, we know what the middle should be, and we know what the ending is going to be.
If only so.
If only so, yes. It's more along the lines of, we know what the beginning is going to be, we think the middle will go like this, and we pray like hell the ending has got to go the way that we need it to. Other than that, if that doesn't happen, there's a ton of editing we have to do. But it's more along the lines of, really, the characters themselves are the puppet masters, and we're just on strings being played.
That's so true.
It's kind of anyone that has any kind of creative artistic ability whatsoever, whether it's writing or music or art or, you know, anything. I don't care if they draw the best stick figures in the world. I think they understand that it's a matter of, you can plan all you want, but it doesn't always go quite the way that you planned. And anybody who's not artistic, I think, can also qualify with that statement too, because they know that you can plan your life all you want it to do, but something is going to creep up along the way and go, that's not how it's going to happen.
Because characters are alive.
Yeah, and that's what characters do. Characters, it's a subconscious part of our brain talking to us more than it's a conscious part of our brain. It really is a whole other being somewhere deep in our minds that we don't have much control over. It's like having a dream. The story is just there, and it's just going no matter what you try to do in it.
I guess that's
the simplest. If you're a non-writer and you want to know what it's like to be a writer, you are stuck in the middle of a dream, and no matter what you do, that dream just keeps on barreling along.
It won't stop.
Yeah, it doesn't stop until you wake up.
Yep.
So, yep, I guess that would be the simplest way of putting it.
Yeah, because sometimes it's hard for people to understand. You know, I would explain, well, the character really didn't want to do that. I plotted it this way, but the character, and they're like, well, the character's in your head. Why would your character be doing that? And I go,
Don't you control your character? I get that all the time. What do you mean she won't do what you want her to do? Don't you control her? No, I don't.
No.
It's a matter of she more or less controls me. I'm at her whim or his whim, not they just dance when I want them to dance.
And it's funny because some great writers actually put that in their books. Agatha Christie did that in a couple of her novels.
Mm-hmm.
She had, I can't remember the name of the book, but she said the character, the writer was saying that the character wouldn't let me do it, and Jap turns to Perot and says, what's he talking about? And he says, I think he's got a writer's illness.
Yes, that's true. And I can't remember what one that is either.
It was the one with the that they were flying, and they thought a bee killed this woman. They were like stuck on a plane, but it turned out to be a poison dart.
Yeah,
and
okay.
It was in the plane. One of the suspects was a mystery writer.
Yeah, I've read that one, but I can probably say I don't think it was one of my favorites, and I didn't end up memorizing it. But she's had so many of them. But
yeah,
I know what one you're talking about because I remember she's only had the one where they were on the plane because I thought that was unusual for her because she's so kind of scattered with her locations. Sometimes.
Yeah, but
pick a new setting, and I thought, well, this is weird because they're trapped.
Yeah, and Perot was asleep during the murder. That's one of my favorite parts of it.
Yeah,
he goes, Jeff goes, where were you? And he's, I was right there asleep.
Yeah, I think they're asleep. Yeah. So, yeah, but it's very true, and it's, but again, like you said, I mean, people who don't write don't really contemplate how it's not a matter of us directing the movie. It's more or less the movie of us watching the movie and then the movie doing something else and us going, well, I guess that works too.
Yep. We only have a very little time left. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Do you have anything upcoming that people would like to know about?
I do. I have... With a little luck of the editing gods, I have a new full-length novel that will be coming out. It's again a paranormal mystery, so an urban fantasy setting. It'll be called A Sight Unknown, and it is a spin-off novel of my A Touch of Darkness and A Touch of Madness series. It has a different lead character who has some type of paranormal ability. She's actually a necromancer. She can see, speak with, and manipulate the dead.
Sounds fascinating. Well, I'd like everyone to thank Billy for such a wonderful thing, and I'm sure we'd all like to enjoy her new book. Next week, we're going to have wonderful authors Will Smith Sr. and Tony Smith to talk about the book The Waymer. Thank you, Billy. I really enjoyed the interview.
Thank you, Sherry. I did, too.
It was such a great time.
It was a good pleasure. And I will be listening next week to listen to Will Smith Sr. and his book that's out, too.
Thank you. And thank you for listening to Welcome to thank you for listening to Chatting with Sherry. Okay, we're off.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm trying to get everything in there. Thank you so much.
Oh, no problem. I mean, it was my pleasure and a huge opportunity for me. Anytime I can promote, and I especially if I can promote in another time zone. And I mean, the beauty of the internet is we can promote in all time zones everywhere. But I mean, quite literally, with you, I can promote in at least I know certain people are listening in such and such time zone because I'm sure you have dedicated local listeners.
Yeah, I have about 17 regular listeners, and I know that it usually goes up to about 50 to 200. It depends on who's on the thing, and it could be even more.
Yeah, of course. It's, you know, it's because somebody said something about how on earth did you, how on earth are you promoting in California or on the West Coast? And I said, well, I don't remember how I met Sherry, but I met her through a blog swap, and I can't remember which site we met through, if it was World Literary Cafe or...
I think it was World Literary Cafe.
Okay. I said, I know I met her through an exchange of blog, you know, a blog hosting thing, and I said, we swapped interviews. I said, and I told a couple of my friends, I said, do you remember Sherry? And I apologize if I murder your last name, I might, but I pronounce it Rabinowitz.
That's perfect. You said it absolutely right.
Okay, I've been pronouncing it right, so...
You have.
But so I told, you know, I told them, I said, do you remember that one? And they're like, oh, yeah. The Murder, Inc., right? And I said, yes. And they were like, okay. I said, well, apparently she lives on the West Coast and she does a blog talk radio. And I said, so, you know, regardless, I said, just like with my blog, I know I have some specific readers and most of them are local to here. I said, I'm sure she has some local listeners that are fair, you know, that are regulars that listen to her show. I said, so it'll just be fantastic to at least get those, hopefully more than five people, that listen to her show. And they're like, no, that's really awesome. So, I mean, it was a big opportunity for me. So I really appreciate you taking the time, you know, to have me on the show.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I really enjoyed it. I hope you did, too.
Oh, I did. I like
we didn't get through all the questions. I was really enjoying what we were talking about.
Well, you know, I had a television interview last week, and they had like 20, 25 questions that we were supposed to get through during the like half an hour I was on there. And they ran over, so my time ended up only being something like 20 minutes instead of the half an hour. And then I think we got through like five of the questions. And
well, we had a whole half hour, but we were just talking about other, you know, we kind of veered off to the how writing works and the characters and stuff like that. Actually, I think that was very interesting, and that's what I like, is that you have that option.
Yeah. Oh, I love being able to, I kind of enjoy, like, when, anytime I'm discussing with writers, other writers and things like that, when we veer totally off the topic of, I did a panel at one of the conventions, and we were supposed to be talking at, you know, like, we were supposed to be talking, like, what's our writing schedule like, and what's a day in the life of an author like, you know, kind of a thing. And, man, we got off on, like, strange cravings that we get while we write. You know, just like, it's, you know, I said something like, it's kind of like being pregnant when you're writing. It's, you just get these odd cravings or the weirdest things happen. Like, I had made the comment that I get a craving for gummy bears. That's my big thing. I always want gummy bears. I usually don't want them anytime except for when I'm writing. And my feet and my hands are absolutely frigidly cold. No matter how hot it is in my house, no matter how many layers I'm wearing, I could be wearing gloves. And my feet and my hands are freezing cold and my nose is running.
Oh,
and that's
God.
When I know, and that's when I know I'm in the zone. So, And that's, we got off on a tangent for that for like, I don't know, 12 minutes during like this hour long panel. And it was just, it was so funny because we were supposed to be talking about kind of a day in the life of a writer. Each of us were supposed to be giving a breakdown and then a little bit about our work. But I think we spent more time on oddball things that happen to each of us while we write versus, and this is step one, and this is step two.
I think the reason you did that was because I really don't think people want to know step one and step two. They're more interested in all the other stuff, like that you get a craving for food or that you're cold.
Yeah. What is it
the
about
personal
you?
Stuff.
Yeah, and the guy that followed up after me, he was like, now, it's really interesting that VC mentioned that she's freezing when she writes. He's like, because me, I am sweating like it's the Sahara in the middle of August. He's like, I have to, like, strip down to practically nothing. He's like, so I'm butt naked sitting in front of a typewriter. He still types everything on a manual typewriter even. He said, I am butt naked in front of a typewriter. And he's like, I've got, like, my feet in ice-cold water, and I have like, six fans blowing on me. He's like, and BC over here is apparently shivering through her next novel. I said, well, you swim through yours, and I shiver through mine, I guess.
That is so. I get dry mouth.
You what? Oh, you
get
dry
mouth. I have to, I'm drinking, like, loads and loads of water. I get so thirsty, and then in the middle I have to, oh, damn, and I bring everything with me to go to the bathroom because I have to pee because I've been drinking water. I get really bad dry mouth.
And my thing is I hardly touch anything to drink. I could sit for an eight-hour block of time and barely touch a bottle of water the entire time. And then the instant I close that laptop, I'm like, I could drink a swimming pool.
Yeah. I guess everybody's bodies are different when they're doing it. I don't really understand. I don't think anybody understands it.
No, and even writer to writer sometimes Mm-mm. doesn't understand it either. Sometimes Mm-mm. you'll talk to some writers and they're like, you do what is your like pre-writing ritual? And they're like, I was like, why? What do you do? They're like, nothing. Plop on the couch, pop up in the laptop, and write. That's what I do. I'm like, oh, no. I have to go get a blanket, and my pillows have to be just right, and, you know, I have to make sure one of my dogs is in the same room with me, and I have to have, like, gummy bears at my left hand and something to drink at my right hand, and I have to have enough movies lined up that I can just pop in another movie afterwards if it's going to go longer than a two-hour writing session. And they're like, you have way too much preparation. I said, and then sometimes I just pop open the laptop and then write.
Yeah. you know what's really funny? My first book started as a short story. And I was writing it. I was a customer service rep, and I was writing it in between calls at work. You know how you finish all the paperwork and you have nothing to do between calls?
Of course.
There's, like, boring time.
I work for 911. I understand.
So I would have my handwriting is horrible. So I would just sit there with my notebook and I'd be intensely writing the short story. And I started doing it, it was fan fiction, and I started posting it as a serial in little bits. And it was very popular. I mean, I had like 15,000 hits with the fourth bit, and people kept, what happens next? I mean, and they would get mad at me. Why haven't you written the next part? When are you going to write the next part? Come on! And I'm like, okay, you guys, I do have a job.
Well, and that's another point, is we can't possibly write fast enough to keep up with the demand.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes them 4 hours to read a book. It takes us a minimum of 4 months to write it.
Exactly.
I mean,
longer, because I actually expanded it and all kinds, I mean, and added a kitten and...
Yeah, of course. You got to go back and edit, and then there's the I like to put things away for no less than 2 months. I like to, I type the end, and I'll go back and I'll edit it and do like a round one editing. I'll let my beta readers have it. I'll send it off to Critique Circle and let them rip it to shreds.
Right.
And then I go back and do all the notes that the betas gave me and all the notes that Critique Circle gave me and everything. And then I put it away. Yep. And I don't want to look at it for 2 months. Not the story. I may work on the cover art with the local artist. I may figure out what the blurb is going to be, you know, what the synopsis should be, things like that. But I basically don't want to look at it again. I write something else.
Yep.
And then I pull it back out, and then I edit it again, which is why I pretty much come out with one book a year.
It takes me a long while because I have this thing. I write in the morning, and then I work on my show. And then during the day, I have other stuff I have to do. And then at night, I'm typing another book into my laptop while I'm watching TV. But I have to be alone because I live with my mom. So I have to be alone when I'm doing it. So it's usually during something that she hates, like Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Ow. Yeah.
I'm typing it in.
Yeah, I lived with my mother for a while. I took care of her while she was convalescing. And, yeah, we could never agree. Unless it was Charmed or Supernatural, we could not agree on a TV show to save our lives.
Yeah. Yes. She does not understand my fascination, although my father had it. So she does sort of with Harry Potter or any of that. When my father was alive, she was kind of forced to go to see the Harry Potters because my brother, and my dad loved it.
Mm-hmm.
One time she says, okay, I'll go see Harry Potter, and you guys have to go see a movie with us. And I go, okay. And she really hoped we wouldn't like it, but it was Mrs. Henderson Presents, and we all loved it.
It's almost contagious sometimes. It's my middle sister, I have two older sisters and several half-siblings, but my two older sisters I'm particularly close to, we're big movie people. That's our big thing. We will get together to go to a movie, to eat some dinner, maybe do a little shopping, and then break. We go back to our regular lives.
Mm-hmm.
And my middle sister is not a horror movie fan. She can't tolerate them at all. She has no stomach for them, and she just thinks they're stupid. But every so often we'll manage to convince her, because we go to these sappy romantic films for her all the time, and so we'll convince her every so often to go to a horror movie. And we're very particular. We always make sure we pick one that has like a big, not romantic plot to it, but at least a big personable, you can really get in and root for these characters, kind of, instead of just your usual slash and trash, which is what my oldest sister and I really enjoy. But and every so often we'll take her to one, and she's just like, and she's rooting along with us in the middle of the movie, and we're throwing popcorn at the screen, the bad guys and everything, and we'll get out of the movie and I'll be like, see, it wasn't that bad. She's like, well, I could have done with a little less blood, but it was actually pretty good. And it's just sometimes contagious when you're in a group of people that absolutely adore a specific anything.
Yeah. And it's hard
and then
with them, because they're like, they feel out of it.
Yeah, and they want to be part of it. They want, and so they start looking at it differently than they would have before.
Yeah.
I think
they so
start
too.
It's they may not grow to love it, but it's at least a subtle appreciation of it. It's kind of like opera. Love it or hate it. Those are the two reactions to it. If you hate it, you might appreciate it at some point, but it you never love it, kind of a thing.
Well, and then there's the qualification is that I am not a fan of all opera, but I love Italian opera.
Well, so yeah, there's sometimes there. There are
subtly
different. Yeah, vastly different and very subtle differences between the different types of opera that are available. But yeah, but because of that love for Italian opera, you can appreciate the rest of the opera. It's just not really your thing.
Exactly.
It's I adore mysteries. I could just devour mysteries all day long as far as books go.
Me too.
But there are other types of, like, general fiction, unless I